Dave, thank you first of all for being with us, and thank you for your service. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You are from Vivian, lifelong resident?
Lifelong resident, born and raised there.
Tell me what life was like for you just prior to the start of the war in Vivian. How old were you, and what was life like?
When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, I was a senior in high school. I remember coming in from out doing the chores out. I lived with my grandparents on a farm south of Vivian. And when we come back in from doing the chores, I remember my grandpa Dunlap was sitting in the big rocking chair, and he looked at me over the top of his glasses, and he said, "Well, we're at war. The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor." I didn't even know what Pearl Harbor was at that time. And I finished high school and stayed home and helped my dad a year, and then went to the service. I took training in Fort Hood, Texas, and we trained to go to the islands to fight the Japanese. And at the end of our, almost at the end of our basic training time, they cut off a week of basic training off of 17 weeks. So we was cut to 16, and we were supposed to go home and be sent to Europe. This was after the Germans had the Americans surrounded at Bastogne.
Mm-hmm.
And we were supposed to have 10 days delay en route at home. They cut 5 days off of that before we ever left camp. And I was home one day and one night before I left to go overseas.
Did you have classmates that were of an age that might have been off to war? Did some of them go?
There was five boys in my high school class, and three of us were in Europe. I never got to see the other two while they in there, but I saw them after the war was over. I mean, we knew mm-hmm. we weren't very far apart, but I never recall ever seeing them during the service.
You say you went to basic in Fort Hood in Texas?
No, they didn't go to Fort Hood.
No, but you did.
Yeah, I did.
Had you ever been that far from home before?
No. Been to Rapid City.
Uh-huh.
I'd never been out of the state of South Dakota until I went to service.
What was that experience like?
Oh, it's quite, like I've said before, it's quite an eye-opener, especially when you get in combat, to think that them shells are real live, and they're not a controlled firing like you would have in basic training camp.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you left the U.S., where'd you ship out of?
I shipped out of Boston, Massachusetts.
How long did it take?
We left to Boston, I think, on the 7th of January, and we landed in Glasgow, Scotland, on the 15th, so it was about 10 days.
What was the mood of the people there, and what was the mood of the boys you were with at the time when you landed?
I think the mood of the country was, I mean, people nowadays cannot figure how united the country was. It was just quite a trip for us. I mean, not like I said, none of us probably been that far from home. We knew we had a job to do. They told us we was going to be there 6 months plus the duration, and we just took our chances. I realize that war is a dangerous thing, but I don't remember being in fear every day. I mean, we knew we were faced with a lot of danger, but we just learned to take it like it is.
I've heard some other people say in the past that while they were doing it, they tried not to think about it.
You don't think mm-hmm. about it.
How long were you in Scotland, and when you left there?
We landed that morning, and they put us on troop train, took us to Southampton, England. And we were there 2 or 3 days, and they put us on another ship and crossed the English Channel to Le Havre, France. And they took us off that troop ship on an LST and run it up on the beach at Le Havre, and we walked out on the sand, and they took us to some temporary barracks there and stayed that night, and the next day they loaded us on a troop train, boxcars, mm-hmm. 40, the old 40 and 8s that mm-hmm. come from World War One,
mm-hmm.
took us across France, spent that whole day going across France, and we got off the train in some little town down near Metz or Verdun, south of Bastogne. I remember when we got off the troop train, the guy that took charge of us was a veteran of the 101st Airborne that had been surrounded in Bastogne. He must have been all of about 19 or 20 years old, I would guess. And still remember, he had a big pistol strapped on his side. And when he took charge of us, he said, told us that he was at Bastogne, and he said the Germans had the town surrounded, and they wanted us to surrender, and we told him that, that, you know, in a nice way, that we weren't going to, and he said, and they started to shell the town, blew the wine cellars open, he said, and so we drank the wine, and we stayed.
This is the spring of 44. Is that right?
No, spring of 45.
Spring of 45.
January of 45, okay. I got and landed in Luxembourg.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And then my first night of combat was in very early days of February.
What were those first days like?
Well, it was about a foot of snow on the ground, and the spring thaw was started. When we crossed the river from Luxembourg into Germany, we crossed on a footbridge, probably 3 or 4 feet wide with rope sides on it, and then just tied from a tree on one side to a tree on the other. That's what we crossed on. I was assigned to the 44th Battalion of the 6th Armored Division. We were machine gun section, carried a 30 caliber machine gun. And when we got up on the rather hilly terrain where we went in, heavily pine trees, wooded, we run into the Siegfried line, and that. And a man, German pillbox, the Germans had their artillery zeroed in on that pillbox. When it got dark that night, they started to shell us. They spent most of the night off and on shelling us most of the night. Next morning at daylight, my foxhole had about 3 feet of pine tree boughs in front of it. A young guy from Chicago and I were in the foxhole together, and when it got daylight, you could hear German voices, and when it got daylight enough, you could see here probably 100 yards out in front of us with armed German soldiers. I don't think they knew that we were still up there. Anyhow, the old machine gun sergeant kept saying, you guys keep that machine gun quiet. They don't even know we're up here. And finally, about 10 o'clock, they told us to leave all our equipment and take the wounded out on stretchers. Three of us started down the hill with a guy on a stretcher. The fellow across the stretcher from me, big shell lit behind us, and he got a piece of shrapnel about 2.5 inches long, probably right between his shoulder blades. I don't know who he was or where he's from. I have no idea who the guy on the stretcher was. Anyhow, I crawled over there to him and unbuttoned his shirt and his jacket. Then the first aid man came. We took that fellow back across the river on that, back across that footbridge, and there was a Jeep there. Remember, they had 6 stretcher cases on it. Took him back to the field hospital. And that was my initiation to combat. Mm-hmm. I crossed the Rhine River in the same outfit. We crossed, I think, the 26th of March, and another outfit had gone through where we'd gone through. The Americans had a heavy smoke screen laid down. We crossed it under the protection of that smoke screen. Our job was to capture several little towns that maybe the Germans would leave a few armed troops in these towns to hold us up. Easter Sunday morning, we got off the half tracks, and some of the officers said that my company was in the lead that day, and the lead wound up to be a young lad from Moundsville, West Virginia, and myself. We walked alongside the lead tank into this town, but before we got to the bridge outside of town, we run into a German machine gunner and about 3 or 4 riflemen, and 2 men out of my squad got killed, both on the road right behind me, and we just had to go away on the way and leave them laying on the road. That's the last I ever remember seeing them. And we walked alongside that lead tank into town and captured the town, and just they loaded us back on half tracks, and we proceeded on eastward into Germany.
Did you see civilians when you went through these towns?
Well, when the firing had quit, yeah, you'd see them. We weren't exposed to them too much, but we would see them, especially kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we'd be back off of the front where it was quiet, there would be German civilians around.
What was their reaction to you when you were coming through?
We didn't run into any really opposition. Once in a while, you'd find someone that had their Hitler Youth training. They were pretty tough, but by and large, the public was glad to see the Americans come. Germans were tired of the war. They'd had several years of it, and most people, except probably the leaders of the country, knew that it was a lost cause by that time anyhow.
Where were you when you found out that the Germans had capitulated and the war was done?
I was in a little town being the Russian zone now, near Erfurt, Germany. We were south of Berlin. The name of the town was Rocklitz. Then they moved us from there. We lived in apartment buildings in Smyrna, Germany. That's north of Erfurt. And then we come back. We drove in convoy back to Frankfurt, Germany, and that's where I came from. I came from Frankfurt to Reims, France. We came home to, the young ones came home to make up the task force, help make up the task force to invade Japan. I landed in New York the morning the Japanese surrendered. And I remember when we were getting off the ship, I could see them, people uptown, some of the ship's crew was there, and he said, "That's Chinatown you can see up there." And we thought, well, we'll go uptown tonight and have a big time. But they took us over to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey, and they said, "No, you guys are not going uptown tonight." The next morning, they put us on troop train, and we started home to Camp Coy, Wisconsin, and then we went home from there.
What were things like at home when you got back?
Well, I was the oldest of three boys in the family, and I had two sisters. My youngest brother was like 9 years old when I left to go to the service, and I'm sure it had a direct effect on the family. And I'm sure that it was overjoyed in the family. I can't remember now. That's been a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember how happy I was to get home. But I also remember telling my dad and mom before I left that I was going to come home from this thing. And I was fortunate enough to make it home, never got hit, but seen several of them that didn't make it home.
You'd mentioned earlier that two of your classmates went back. Did both of them make it back?
Yep.
And were all three of you in Vivian then at that time?
We graduated in 1942, and we'd gone to service by 44.
Mm-hmm. Did all three come?
Did all three come back?
Was there an adjustment, or what kind of it? That's a silly question. Was there any kind of an adjustment when you came back?
Well, I can't remember that it was that tough. I mean, it was one of them things you had to do, I guess. I think it's a lot different now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand how it is now sometimes.
You had mentioned when we were watching the film, or after we watched the film, that you talked about the stretcher story and not knowing who was on that stretcher, but then learning years later.
Well, a doctor down in Atlanta, Georgia, his great uncle was my half-track driver, and about 10 years before that, his uncle had got in contact with me. The old track driver had passed on, and they got my name through a little book that they had in the. I remember the day we signed in that little book. You know, they got a hold of me, and he, through the wonders of the internet, he located this guy that was in the foxhole with me. Lived in Chicago. His name is Harbeck. He still lives there, and this fellow that walked alongside of me with the lead tank in Spangenberg, Germany. They're both still alive, and this doctor had us, those two, and there's a farm boy down in Inwood, Iowa, just out of Sioux Falls way. Him and I were in the same squad, and he's the only one that I'd seen, and, you know, since we got home. We see each other not as often as we should, probably considering our age, but anyhow, he had all four of us on the telephone, then his uncle and him was on there, and we talked for 2 hours, visited on the phone.
I know this is kind of a big question. I have a 14-year-old daughter. If you could talk to her and her generation, what are things that you would like for them to remember about the experience? It's a big question, I know.
Well, I think they got to understand, they can't understand how united the country was. I mean, there was no question. We were there till the war was over, and there was no question that we figured we was going to win. I think today the people have a hard time understanding how united the country was. That's the big difference, I think. As far as telling them what combat's like, you can't really describe what it's like. It's something you got to experience.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you'd like to add, Dave, as we finish up?
Well, I was fortunate enough to make a trip back to Europe about 10, 12 years ago. I went back and lived with a Belgian family. And probably 10, 15 years before I went, I found out that those two men that we lost on the road that Easter Sunday morning are buried in a national cemetery in Holland. Mark Groten Holland, a fellow from Eindhoven, Holland, wrote a story on this Mark Groten National Cemetery, and he had a list of all the ones out of the 6th Armored Division that was buried there, and I was just a replacement. And I thought, well, I probably don't know any of them, but I'll go down through the list, and sure enough, them two men out of my squad, one was named Gammons, one was named Greathouse, are buried in that National Cemetery. And my company commander got hit that morning. I never knew what happened to him. He's buried in the same cemetery. He died about a week later than that. Then when I went back to Belgium to visit, this Belgian met me at the plane in Luxembourg, took me home and took me around the next morning and showed me all his house. And he said, "Now my house is your house. You're free to go any place in the house." Well, I had my own room. And every morning we'd get up, we'd decide where we were going to go, and just him and I took a trip. We went up to Bastogne. He lived about 40 miles from Bastogne, and I had gone through there on the way into Luxembourg. And we spent a couple of days visiting those little towns around there, went to Malmedy, where the Germans had massacred 130-some American prisoners of war, and went got to see where that happened. And then we went into Germany, him and I, and in May, right after the war was over, I got to visit Buchenwald concentration camp. And I had an old camera that I'd picked up over there, black and white. I took some pictures, and this Belgian took me back to, it's just outside of the town of Weimar, Germany, and we went back to visit it. When I visited it in 1945, the fellow that took us through there had been a prisoner there for about 12 years. He could speak English, and he told us what camp life was like. And when I went back in 1996, the main gate still the same. They'd painted it. And the crematorium's still there where the furnaces were, and down in the basement, they had the basement walls were about 12 feet high, and they had hooks around the edge of the wall where they let the people hang there. And then the crematorium, the furnaces were right up above that. That's still there, and there was one other building still there, and what they called the parade ground. It was white sand right inside the main gate. He said that they'd let them stand there for days at a time. He said the day that the Americans come in Normandy, they stood out there for the big part of 2 days. And I guess that's, I got to go to visit several other national cemeteries. I got to see where General Patton was buried in Luxembourg.
Mm-hmm.
and went to visit a German cemetery, and it's quite a difference between the American cemetery and the German. There's no white crosses or nothing. It's pretty drab, not many flowers, and no flags. I mean, they keep it mowed. There's a German cemetery down the road about a half a mile from where Patton is buried, and Ham, Luxembourg, I think it's buried. And, I guess to suffice to say, I'm fiercely proud of the fact that I served my country, but we felt like it was our duty. And like I said before, I was the oldest of family. I felt it was my duty to go. My other two brothers eventually were in service, not during combat, but in peacetime.
Dave Moore, Vivian, South Dakota, thanks a lot for spending time with us. Appreciate it. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.